Thanks for staying with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're going to be talking now about glioblastoma. It's a common and aggressive brain tumor and one of the deadliest forms of cancer. And thankfully, there's a group of Wisconsin doctors and researchers who are working on a therapeutic vaccine. And we have with us Dr. Mahua Day, a tenured associate professor of neurological surgery and director of the Surgical Neuro-Oncology Program at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in, want to hear from you. Have brain tumors affected your life, and what would a potential new treatment mean for you? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Dr. Day, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, we're going to be talking about glioblastoma. And let's get to the basics first. What is it and what happens to the body if you have it?
So glioblastoma is the most common primary brain cancer. It's a brain cancer that grows from the brain itself. So there are certain cells in the brain that can become cancerous, and that gives rise to the cancer. The symptoms are usually seizures, headaches. Sometimes you can have neurological deficits, depending on which location the tumor is growing, like speech problems, motor weakness, anything, you know, our brain controls everything. So the symptoms could be wide-ranging.
And who's most likely to have or to get glioblastoma?
Thankfully, it's not very common, like lung cancer or breast cancer, but it's definitely one of the deadliest ones. It primarily affects older people over the age of 60, but we see them in younger people as well. If you look at the data, would suggest it's slightly more common in men compared to women, and slightly higher predominance in Caucasian population compared to others.
So it can, I assume it affects your personality, your ability to speak and think?
Absolutely. You know, brain is the most important organ. Well, that's what I think. I'm a neurosurgeon, right? But it's the computer that operates us. Yeah. So anything growing there that impairs the functioning of the brain can affect a lot. You know, many times other cancers, we do surgery, we take them out. But when you have cancer in the brain, everything we do has consequences. And the consequences really impact people's quality of life.
Yeah. And you said it's infrequent compared to other forms of cancer, but how many people are affected by it in the course of a year here in the state, or maybe nationally? There are better numbers. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say, like, if we look at the overall U.S. statistics, there are about 13 to 20,000 people who are currently alive with per year with glioblastoma alone.
Mm. So, and the outlook is apparently not good.
Yeah, it's one of the hardest cancers to treat. The average survival in the best clinical trial setting is about slightly over a year. And eventually the cancer always comes back.
So you can get rid of it, but it's going to come back.
That's right. So it's kind of, you know, the first line of treatment is surgery followed by chemo and radiation. And that takes care of it for the first go around. And on an average, anywhere from 9 months to 14 months, the cancer does come back. And when it does come back, then it's very, very difficult to treat.
Yeah, because I suppose you can't go through those same typical treatments if it's only been 9 months or less.
Right. And many times we can, but many times we do go back because there's not that much option that's out there, you know. So we do sometimes try re-surgery depending on how patients are doing, depending on where the location is. Is it gonna, we always try to balance the risk and benefit, right? Is it gonna make you lose your mobility, then maybe the gain is not that much, versus if it's in a quieter area of the brain where we can take it out and we can give you good quality of life, that's a better strategy. So the primary focus for all of us here is to maintain a good quality of life while we are, you know, buying as much time as possible.
Yeah, yeah. And as we talk with Dr. Day, I hope you'll join in. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is talk@WPR.org. Gianni in Montello has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, yes. Larry, I have a question about the catalyst for glioblastoma. Is there a particular lifestyle or exposure, environmental exposure, or is it genetically based? What is known at this point? What might precipitate this?
Yeah, good questions.
So, now, there is no known cause, like a direct association of anything that causes. There are certain gene mutations that we find after someone is diagnosed with glioblastoma that can make it more aggressive. But this is all on the hindsight, after someone gets a glioblastoma, we don't know of any modifiable factors that can prevent us from getting glioblastoma at this point.
That's too bad. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Phyllis in Windsor. Phyllis, hi to you.
Hi. So two of my dad's siblings died from brain cancer, and I don't know what kind they had. This was some time ago. And I'm just wondering how likely that is to run in families, or did we just get a bad luck?
It would primarily depend on what was the tumor. So glioblastoma is just one of the brain cancer, but there are many different types of brain cancer. Some can have genetic component to it, some don't. So without knowing exactly what kind of tumor it was, it's hard for me to comment on that.
Yeah. Well, which ones have a genetic component to them?
So there are certain genetic diseases like neurofibromatosis, you know, that NF2 gene, and they can have certain types of brain cancer. Or brain tumors that we can screen for that has like genetic component associated with it, versus gliomas usually don't have strong genetic lineage. Mm-hmm. Where it can like pass down from one person to another person.
I got it. Phyllis, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Maybe see if you can study a little more, and you could maybe learn more about the tumors that the cancer that affected your family members. I'm sure you've looked, but maybe try again. You know, there's no cure for this glioblastoma, but that's kind of where you come in. Let's talk about what you study.
Right. What we are trying to do is we developed a cancer vaccine that we tested in mice, and we're kind of optimizing in mice. So, as I mentioned, we can't stop people from getting glioblastoma since we don't know what causes it. But once someone is diagnosed with glioma, with glioblastoma, it always comes back. So if we can stop it from coming back, that would be a great win against this disease. So where my lab comes in is with collaboration with my research collaborator, Dr. Gallup, who we developed this cancer vaccine. So what we do is when I do the surgery, take the tumor out from patient's brain, we take the tumor to our lab and we genetically modify the tumor to a point that the tumor can secrete some immune-modifying cytokines that acts as a vaccine. So once we give it back to, in this case, we're right now testing in mice. When we give it back to mice, it trains the mouse's immune system. And the goal would be the same thing for patients, that we will make the vaccine from their tumor and we will give it back to them after the surgery. And this tumor in the form of a vaccine will train their immune system to recognize any residual cancer cell, which they're always, like, I can surgically take out everything I can see and everything an MRI can see, but there are always residual microscopic cancer cells. Those are the cells that give rise to the cancer that comes back afterwards. But our immune system, if we train our immune system, they can recognize these microscopic cancer cells and attack and kill them before they had a chance to give rise to the recurrence.
That is fantastic and amazing, actually. How's your research funded?
So, you know, there's multiple ways, some funded by Department of Defense, some funded by our partner at Wharf Therapeutics, who have been very gracious collaborators in this, and departmental funding. So a project like this requires, you know, developing therapeutics is a daunting process and requires many sources of funding. So we try to do our best to get, you know, as many people interested in our work and get the funding to keep the work moving.
Well, with something like this, and you're really showing progress in this, in your experiments so far, let's hope that funding can keep coming for sure. David in Prescott has a comment. Let's go there. David, hi.
Hi. I'm just curious. We have, just in the last 2 years, two very close friends, not related, just friends, have each passed away from this disease. My question is that transmittable? Is it a transmittable disease?
No, it is not a transmittable disease.
So that was just bad luck, I guess, on your friend's parts there, David.
Yeah.
And it's too bad. Thank you for calling. Jean emailed us. Jean's brother passed away of glioblastoma within a year of being diagnosed. For many years, he cleaned floors at night with headphones on, listening to music. Jean's wondering, could that have had contributed to his getting the brain tumor? He also had a myotonic dystrophy. He was 47.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's no published literature that kind of points to a true cause and effect for it. I mean, this is a devastating disease. And I feel like lately we're hearing more and more people with this disease and how devastating it is for families who get diagnosed. probably we won't know for another 5 to 10 years if the incidence rate is actually increasing or not. Because some of these, like, environmental data takes a long time to really shape and give us feedback, but I do hear a lot more people with stories. And I don't know, it may be just, like, you know, the bias because I treat this disease, so I hear a lot more, but I do get the sense that I do hear a lot of people who have been diagnosed with this cancer.
Dr. Mahua Day is a tenured associate professor at Neurological Surgery and is director of the Surgical Neuro-Oncology Program at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Great to have her with us. You can join in, number 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Talking with Dr. Mahua Day today, a tenured associate professor of neurological surgery at UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and we've zeroed in on brain tumors and in particular glioblastoma. Dr. Day and her associates are working on a vaccine that can be given to people who have glioblastoma, who have had their surgery and other treatments. So this vaccine would prevent the glioblastoma from reappearing, and some really positive results so far. Tom in Green Bay has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Dr. Day. Yeah, my brother, 65, down in Texas, has glioblastoma. They did surgery. He seems to be doing fine right now. Two questions. Is DOGE affecting the funding for your research, Dr. Day? And also, would I need to bring my brother up to Wisconsin to get this vaccine?
So, first of all, I'm sorry to hear about your brother. I know it's a difficult time. It's a difficult decision. The DOGE is affecting all avenues of funding, and, you know, it's a trickle-down effect. It affects, like, NIH funding has been limited. Universities are getting lesser federal dollars from many different sources, so it definitely slows down our work. We are still in preclinical setting. We are planning to put an application to FDA for getting permission for starting a phase one trial, but that process is, again, very costly process, and with also the personnel cut at FDA, things are slowing down on that end, how fast they review application to approve new therapy. So, unfortunately, we are not in a position right now to start human trial. We are still in the process of filing for that new investigational drug status so we can start the trial. And the current landscape is definitely going to slow the process for us.
It's unfortunate. Tom, I'm sorry to hear about your brother. Thank you very much for calling. Kit in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, it's your turn. Hi, Kit.
Hi there. I am calling because my husband died just almost 5 years ago from a large glioblastoma, right frontal lobe cancer. He did have surgery to remove it at Mayo Clinic. He had been 15 years treated for chronic leukemia and was in remission. He also had had metastatic melanoma and had been watched for 5 years at Mayo Clinic and had no reoccurrence. So when this he didn't have headaches. He didn't have what would ever have led me to believe he had anything for brain issues, except that he was beginning to become confused and not paying attention to things he normally took care of. So when we ended up, and then he started just failing. I was having to help him get dressed, and so we did go. We did go back to Mayo Clinic, not knowing what it was. And from the emergency room, they did a CAT scan and came back and told us he had a brain tumor. And he did live for 2 months after the surgery. We elected not to do chemo or radiation. And our doctor at Mayo Clinic said we made the right choice. Hmm. He was never in pain. He was pleasant. he hallucinated some, but it was just a very unexpected and confusing diagnosis.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really sorry to hear that. But, that's the thing, our brain is a very sophisticated organ. It has very defined areas that do different things. So right frontal lobe and, someone will have confusion. That kind of makes sense because our frontal lobes are that does more like executive function, like high-level thinking, makes us kind of human, makes us who we are, help us perceive things. So when that area gets affected by tumor, we see these kind of symptoms where this failure to thrive, not wanting to do things, confusion, not being able to do things that you were able to do before. And many times, unfortunately, people chalk those as like, oh, we're just getting old. And that could be, very confounding, especially in older age, because we dismiss so many things. I'm just getting tired because I must be getting old. But in those areas of the brain, cancer can grow and can be delayed in diagnosis because we just don't think much of those kind of quote-unquote softer symptoms.
Yeah. Kid, I'm sorry, and thank you for sharing that with us. Michelle in Benson, your turn. Hi, Michelle.
Well, my first question was answered. It was about whether she's experimenting on human beings, and she hasn't gotten to that point yet, using human beings in their trials. But I have another question. Now I'm nervous, and let's see if I can remember it. Some of the percentages that might be available on, like how many farmers that deal with pesticides are dealing with this kind of cancer. What are the percentages of life expectancy in the group that she presented that was 9 months to 14 months after the surgery? Like how many people are in that group? What a percentage?
Sure.
So we don't really have specific data for, say, farmers who get diagnosed because our data is just not that granular right now for me to really comment on that. In terms of the 9 to 14 months, that's the average. Like if you think of whenever we think of data, it's kind of like a bell-shaped curve, where the middle of the bell-shaped curve is the average we quote, and that's where, like, 92. And then there are people, like our last caller who mentioned her husband only lived 2 months. We have on one side of that bell curve tail where they just don't do well from the very beginning. And then we also have some long-term survivors that are on the other side of the bell-shaped curve, who are 4 or 5 years out from their initial diagnosis.
So it's definitely varies a bit, but on the average, that's what you can expect, I believe. Well, Dr. Day, are you optimistic?
Yes. Everything we do because we have hope. We can, you know, that's what we do in my lab every day. And we are determined to bend the curve for this disease and provide people hope and time and kind of, you know, stop the disease. So, yes, absolutely.
Well, that's good to hear. You're doing wonderful work, and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. Dr. Mahua Day is an associate professor of neurological surgery, director of the Neurological Neuro-Oncology Program at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And let's hope that there's money available to keep this research moving forward, because it's been very optimistic so far in her work. And thank you for joining us today. This and all our programs, a team effort, our producers, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, our directors, technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins. Our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening, and please do stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.